Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Save Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security without cuts. Have to do it. Get rid of the fraud, get rid of the waste and abuse, but save it.
That was then-candidate Donald Trump back in 2015, looking to distinguish himself from his competitors by giving full support to a popular government program, Social Security. He may have been light on specifics of any plan for the program, but Trump went hard on its importance. Here he is again in a 2016 debate.
We have in Social Security right now thousands and thousands of people that are over 106 years old. Now, you know they don't exist. They don't exist. There's tremendous waste, fraud, and abuse, and we're going to get it. But we're not going to hurt the people who've been paying into Social Security their whole life, and then all of a sudden they're supposed to get less. We're bringing our jobs back. We're going to make our economy great again.
But over the past few years, the White House has proposed cuts to Social Security in its annual budget. In fact, this year's budget called for a decrease of $26 billion. With Democrats in charge of the House of Representatives, it's unlikely that these cuts will be passed into law. But now, an annual report released this week from the White House is raising alarms on the future of Social Security again, with economic forecasts showing that the program won't have enough money to pay out full benefits by sometime in 2035. So, is Social Security in trouble? And if so, what can we do to fix it? Let's figure it out. I'm Tanzina Vega, and it's The Takeaway. Joining me now is Nancy Altman, president of the nonprofit Social Security Works. She's also a member of the Social Security Advisory Board appointed by Nancy Pelosi in 2017. Nancy Altman, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I just want to clarify that we know you're not speaking to us on behalf of the Social Security Advisory Board for this interview, but given that we've just gotten this new report from the federal government, what does it tell us about the future of Social Security?
The future of Social Security is strong. The most important takeaway, I think, from this trustees report that was just released on Monday is that at the end of the 21st century, Social Security will only cost 6% of gross domestic product. That is a smaller percentage than Germany, France, Austria, most other industrialized countries spend on their retirement, disability, and life insurance programs today.
So, Nancy, here's the thing, right? I think a lot of Americans hear the stories about Social Security and its insolvency, and there's a lot of fear around it. I mean, should Americans be worried? Even though you're saying Social Security is strong, you're saying no, they should not.
There's been a literally billionaire-funded campaign to undermine confidence in Social Security. But the idea is that Social Security's finances are very carefully looked at. We project out, the Social Security Administration projects out 75 years every single year. The program's only been around for 84 years. No private pensions project out that far. Most other countries don't project out that far. We project out that far to give the American people confidence that the benefits will always be paid in full and on time. And when you project out that far, sometimes you're going to find an unsurprise. It's unsurprising. There might be a surplus. There might be a deficit. It is projecting a shortfall. It's very modest. In fact, the Democrats in Congress are working to eliminate that deficit and, in fact, expand benefits.
Actually, I want to go back a second because you said that there were folks with lots of money who are essentially creating this spin on the Social Security narrative. Who are those folks? What are they trying to do? And why would that benefit them?
The Koch brothers have been involved in it. But also, there's a man who just recently passed away, Pete Peterson, who was Commerce Secretary under Richard Nixon. He was a hedge fund manager, made billions of dollars. And he literally set up a foundation in his name and transfer $1 billion of his wealth to it, as well as a number of other organizations that he set up. I think the reason they do it is that the very wealthy don't want to pay their fair share. And so they argue against Social Security. They argue against Medicare. They argue against Medicaid. These are programs that work. They work better than their private sector alternatives. Yet those who have the ideology that the government should be, as Grover Norquist, the anti-tax person, said, shrunk to the size where it could be drowned in the bathtub, that's what these people want to do.
We keep hearing, though, that Social Security always seems to be in trouble. So let's go back. How does it actually work? We pay into Social Security, and we're expected to get what by the time we retire?
Social Security is insurance. It's insurance against the loss of wages. So you can lose wages if you become disabled and can no longer work. You can lose wages if you die prematurely with young children, and they need those wages for support. And if you're fortunate to live to old age, you need replacement of your wages. And that's what Social Security provides. So what we're paying, if you look at FICA, it stands for the Federal Insurance Contributions Act. In today's parlance, it would be premiums. So we pay premiums for this insurance. And in the event that we become disabled, we die prematurely with dependents, or we live to old age, we, like any insurance policy, we collect. Every insurance company holds a reserve because we're promising benefits far out into the future. The other thing this Monday's report showed is that the surplus in Social Security is $2.9 trillion. That's a surplus.
So are there problems with Social Security today that didn't exist in the past?
In fact, Social Security is a solution. We are facing a retirement income crisis because defined benefit plans, private sector defined benefit plans, traditional pensions have disappeared. 401ks have proven themselves to be inadequate for any but the extremely wealthy. So people in the future are going to be more reliant on Social Security. It is the most efficient, secure, fair in its distribution, portable from job to job. It's the best retirement income system in the country. So it's a solution to the retirement income crisis. It's a solution to the squeeze on middle-class families. It's also a solution to the rising income and wealth inequality if we require the wealthiest to pay their fair share.
If we require the wealthiest to pay their fair share. So the question now becomes, we know that that's a big issue, whether it's Social Security or, as you mentioned, many other federal benefit programs. So the question here is, can Americans really expect to retire on this? If I get a Social Security estimate, and I've been paying into Social Security since I was a teenager, essentially, is that enough money for me to retire on, to live out the, you know, hopefully, you know, remaining decades of my golden years after 65? I don't think most Americans will be able to do that.
Well, I think you ask a very good question. First of all, even if Congress did not act whatsoever and took no action at all, even at the end of the century, Social Security would be able to pay about 75% or 80%, 80 cents on the dollar. Now, that's not enough. And as you mentioned, benefits are extremely modest by virtually any standard. That's why the Democrats actually are moving forward. It's an underreported story. But the chairman of the Social Security Subcommittee, now that the House is in Democratic control, is John Larson from Connecticut. He has a bill called the 2100 Act because it restores Social Security to long-range balance through the 21st century and expands benefits. The idea is that you're supposed to be able to retire and maintain your standard of living, which you cannot do now under Social Security. The benefits are just too low, which is why the Democrats are proposing to expand those benefits.
Yet, as we know, there is partisan gridlock, to put it mildly. How partisan has Social Security become, given that this is something that affects all Americans, not those who are Democrats, Republicans, centrists, leftists, progressives? All Americans will be impacted by Social Security or lack thereof. Has this issue been politicized within an inch of its life?
The interesting thing, as polarized as the American people are, we are not polarized over Social Security. This is an issue that is very heavily polled. It's been polled since the 1930s. Everyone who runs for Congress polls on it. Our organization polls on it. AARP polls on it. The conservative organizations poll on it. Everyone polls on it. And the polling comes out always the same, that across the political spectrum, Tea Partiers agree with union members that Social Security is more important than ever, that it should not be cut, and indeed that it should be expanded. Now, what's happened, because the elites have really taken this billionaire-funded campaign, has convinced the elites to try to do things in a sneaky way, avoid political accountability behind closed doors, fast-tracked and so forth. But now the Democrats are saying, no, this is the people's program. It's the people's pension. Let's do this in the open. So they've had hearings. They plan to have a markup. They plan to have a vote. And that will put the Republicans in the position of either having to go along with it, which is what their constituents, I'm confident, will want them to do, oppose, which I think then they'll be politically accountable at the voting booth, or offer an alternative. And at this point, no Republicans in Congress have offered an alternative, because what they seem to want to do is cut benefits. And as you said, the benefits are already too low.
I want to play a call from a listener. Let's take a listen.
Hello, I'm calling from Dallas, Texas, and I plan to retire in 2035. My personal expectation is that Social Security benefit will be so reduced, it will be equivalent to a cup of coffee per day at that point in 2035. So I've made other plans for retirement.
Sort of to my point, Nancy, is that, yeah, right now my Social Security plan could say you're going to get $1,500 a month, but is that $1,500 in 2035 dollars, or is that $1,500 in 2019 dollars that will need to be applied to 2035? How does it work? And of course, that's a rhetorical figure.
The benefits are indexed, but again, your caller, it's not that there would be nothing, but right now, if someone at age 62 who retired last year earning $50,000 received only 32% of their final pay, and that's not enough to live on. Experts think you need about 70%, but that's why we need to expand Social Security. Unlike savings, you cannot outlive Social Security. It is there if you become disabled, which most people will not have enough savings to, you know, God forbid, walk out and get hit by a truck at age 30. Savings aren't going to last you your lifetime. Same thing if you die leaving children. So Social Security, as they say, is a solution. And what we need to do is for people to recognize that we are the wealthiest country in the world at the wealthiest moment in our history. We are much wealthier than we were when 1935, when 1956, when Social Security was, disability insurance was added, and so forth. There's no question we can afford an expanded Social Security. This is a politics in the best sense of the word. It's how do we want to use our common wealth?
Nancy Altman is president of the nonprofit Social Security Works, and she's a member of the Social Security Advisory Board. Nancy, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Dave from San Diego. I am not counting on much coming from Social Security. I've been diligently saving and investing on my own, and I expect there will be something from Social Security, but I'm not planning on it.
Hi, my name is Jessica, and I'm calling from Seattle, Washington. I do not have any hope that I am going to see the Social Security that I've paid. I'm currently 23 years old, and I wanted to start saving for retirement to make up for the fact that I don't believe I'm going to get any Social Security, but due to student loans and the rise of housing costs in Seattle, I haven't been able to do that. So hopefully one day soon I'll be able to start saving. We'll see.
This is Dylan calling from Oldsmar, Florida. I'm not going to be depending on Social Security per se, but I do expect it to be there, as I and every other American have been paying into it for our entire working lives. And we deserve to make sure that it's accountable for and not stolen by anyone in Congress.
Teresa from St. Paul, Minnesota. And I was counting on Social Security. I'm a late baby boomer, and it was always supposed to be there. However, the past couple decades has put that certainty into question. I don't believe it will be fully funded by the time I need it in 5 or 10 years. And what's a boomer to do?
This is John Kennedy from Orlando, Florida. As a 36-year-old, Social Security is a ways off for me. I know I can't count on it, but I also don't know how much it's going to be anyway and how much I'll need. Bottom line, though, is that it's been around a long time, and trying to make my generation stop using it just because previous generations couldn't manage it properly is stupid. It can be fixed, and it should be fixed. A little more tax to do so isn't too high a price to pay.
Call us at 877-8MYTAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway.